This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. The Beatles are hardly obscure, and the release last week of their entire catalog of recordings in new remasterings, as well as the Beatles Rock Band game, has thrust them into the news again. Sales numbers from the first week are now in. News of 626,000 albums sold. And those box sets, by the way, they're counted as one unit. Our rock historian, Ed Ward, has spent the past couple of decades without a single Beatles record in his house, but has used the occasion of the re-release to listen to them all again.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. Gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. I got no kick against modern jazz.
My relationship with the Beatles has always been sort of tense. When they first appeared on the scene, I'd already been through my rock and roll period and rejected it when all the plastic Bobbies and Fabians began to appear. Instead, I'd turned to folk music, which was more real, more important, and more grown up. I had, after all, just turned 15. And there was another thing. My sister, who was 3.5 years younger than me, loved the Beatles. No 15-year-old boy is ever going to share the taste of an 11-year-old girl, for heaven's sakes. But a couple of years later, I went to college and was beginning to change my mind. A friend's brother said he had a protest song he wanted me to hear and played me Satisfaction. A number of my folk idols were plugging in, as I'd already seen Bob Dylan do at Forest Hills Tennis Stadium. So when the Beatles came out with Rubber Soul, I felt they'd met me halfway.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere.
And hey, they were writing protest songs too. So, realizing that folk and rock could coexist peacefully in my life, I continued with both. But unlike with the Rolling Stones, I never went backwards into the Beatles catalog and never paid it much attention. I was far more interested in the innovations they were coming up with, which always seemed to be just in advance of the rest of the world catching on. Like everyone else, I celebrated Sgt. Pepper and wondered about Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane. But suddenly, there were so many interesting groups that the Beatles just became one of them. For me, this changed in 1969. I'd been writing for a new magazine called Rolling Stone, and they asked me to review the new Beatles album, which was a real honor. They didn't even know its name, but within a few days, I did. In a move that's inconceivable now, Capitol Records sent me a copy of Abbey Road 3 weeks before it was going to be released, so I could listen to it and write about it, which I did. The thing was, though, I didn't like it. Surely, I wrote, they must have enough talent and intelligence to do better than this. And so Rolling Stone, which could have scooped the world, held on to the review until someone could be found to write a very positive one. I don't even think I listened to Let It Be when it came out, and then the Beatles were history. And so my record collection, and then my CD collection, was Beatle deficient until just recently. When the remasters were announced, I decided this was my opportunity to rehear the Beatles in their totality, from their first recording session to their last. And if the mastering job was as good as it should be, maybe I'd actually hear them for the first time. American pressings were notoriously bad, and I could never afford the British ones.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on, feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and and I hear them say, got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
The first good thing about the remasters is that they follow the British releases. American publishing fees limited the number of songs on an album, so until Sgt. Pepper, all the Beatles albums were missing tracks. This meant that odd compilations were released from time to time, albums made up of tracks from here and there. So Beatles for Sale and the original Help album are far more coherent artistic statements than their American equivalents, Beatles 65 and the American Help soundtrack. The curve of the band's development was suddenly clearer to me, and Rubber Soul didn't seem like such a radical move in context. It was a natural musical progression, and somewhere along the way, they learned to write decent lyrics. The second good thing about the remasters, of course, is the remastering. Meet the Beatles, warts and all. Not only do the chiming guitars chime brilliantly and Ringo's drums go off like bombs, but the occasional mistake shines through, and the really bad stuff, like the White Album's Revolution 9, is there for all to hear, the Emperor standing naked. But there isn't much really bad stuff, although the White Album could use a good edit down to one disc, and the new sound quality seems to me to be the best these recordings have ever sounded, and that's without hearing the mono mixes, which in some cases are probably even better. And the third good thing, of course, is that it's all here. A double disc called Past Masters collects all the stuff that wasn't on albums, from the early singles to the utterly redundant B-side You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. The black box is like a coffin, or maybe an archive box, which closes with a satisfying magnetic clunk. Here are the Beatles, it says. Make of them what you will. Millions have, and millions will. I finally got to hear it all, and I have to say, I like them better than ever.
Ed Ward lives in the south of France.